Welcome back to Plotted. This is our special spooky Halloween episode, and we have a double feature for you guys.
Yes, we're going to talk about Candyman 1992 and Candyman 2021. Also, if you have not been with us and you're just joining, I'm Ashlyn.
I'm Jana.
And this is Plotted,
where we're breaking down some plots and some movies and roasting them.
Yes.
Sometimes.
And we would love to hear your comments, because we're all about comments, because that's all we do. That's literally all we do.
We just commentate.
Yes. So we're going to try something different. We have been overly describing this plot, which took a lot of time, and we realized we don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. Jana has to edit things.
Yeah.
Jana has to listen to 50 minutes of audio.
Thank you so much, Jana.
You're welcome. I have fun doing it. It's just every once in a while I'm like, Jana, stop talking.
All right. So what we're going to do now is Jana does a lot.
Jana's brain doesn't stop. It's annoying.
She has now made haikus to kind of sum up the plot summaries of the movies. So why don't you do Candyman 1992?
Okay. This is my haiku called Candyman 1992.
Now we all have to get serious now.
Serious. Play me some bongos. Okay. She is too curious. Hook-handed man saves bees. Romance ensues. I am confused.
Snaps and claps, people. Thank snaps you. And claps.
That broke the rules a little bit, but I am confused.
yes.
Okay. Candyman 2021. Razors in candy. An artist reveals the truth. See a doctor, please.
Yes, yes. Snaps and claps.
Thank you very much.
So let's get into Candyman 1992.
Yeah, so this is an old movie. And spoiler alert, because we are going to be unpacking both of these. So if you want to see them, go watch them, come back, and we can actually discuss them.
Exactly. So pretty much, just to give you a gist, Candyman 1992 is about a grad student and her friend that are doing a thesis on the folklore of Candyman. Mm-hmm. And of course, the more she gets into it, the more she realizes that it's more than just folklore. Right. Let's get into maybe the characters.
Yeah. So this movie has a lot to do with urban legends, which yes. I absolutely love. And me and Ashlyn actually took a class in college just
yes,
about
we
folklore.
Did, Professor, what's your name? We appreciate you a lot.
Thank you. You know who you are.
You know who you are, random citizen.
But yeah, it was really interesting to me because Candyman is embodying urban legend. And I feel like he's probably based off the hook-handed thing that, like, swipes your heels out from under your car. He's, like, slashes your heels.
I do get what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, think about it. He is, Jana mentioned it earlier, he is, like, the hash-slinging slasher from SpongeBob. Almost like the trench coat and the hook hand, except now it's a spatula.
I mean, he do be working it, though.
He does. Honestly, the whole costume design was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Everything. Yeah. No, on that topic, I loved his character design. I loved it because he wears his backstory. Like, it's visible on every part of his body, like, what these people did to him. He was a tortured slave, or son of a slave who was tortured and put to death for falling in love with a white woman and having a family with her.
Yes. So this was, unfortunately, this is a very common story that we know from history and now, of whenever a white woman and a black man fall in love together, and if someone gets pregnant, or if anyone finds out about it, 9 times out of 10, if not 9.99 times out of 10, back then they would just end up killing him and lynching him. This movie does good in drawing your attention to that, because a lot of people try to ignore that part of history, and Candyman is here to say, no, you can't.
Right, right. He's a visual representation, living with all of these people in this apartment complex.
Yeah.
And I guess across the city of Chicago, but he's more prevalent in this apartment complex.
Yeah, so if anything, he's like the personification of all of the hate that was shown to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, we loved his character design, we loved his backstory.
His voice, his look,
yes,
all of
amazing.
It.
But he was, the plot with him was a little confusing.
Oh, yeah, the plot was all over the place.
Yeah, mostly because it started off with, if you say Candyman five times in the mirror...
Don't do it.
He'll just come and immediately kill you. Yes, please don't do it. I don't want to be liable for any of this. but the thing is, though, is whenever the main girl says his name five times in the mirror, nothing happens to her until she messes with his legacy.
Mm.
And she does that by pretty much proving that this other guy was Candyman. He was a real person. So everyone's like, oh, Candyman's not real. Then he shows up and he's like, hey, you can't do that.
A little bit of a god complex.
Yeah, he's like, excuse me, like, this is my life. You're going to be my victim now. Let's go.
Be my victim.
Oh, no. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. That's a little inconsistent, though, because she said his name way earlier in the movie and he didn't mess with her. So... it just doesn't really make sense for his character. I mean, like, you can maybe explain it later, I guess, because they do hint that maybe she is a reincarnation of his past love.
Mm.
So I guess sort of maybe that's the excuse, but it doesn't make that much sense. And honestly, too, there was no hint at romance of her, like, discovering her past life.
No.
Nothing. It just kind of came at you in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Right. And because this movie is based in... reality, you know, or present day 1992, you just automatically assume reincarnation isn't a thing.
Right.
So at the end, when he's like, it's always been you, Helen, and you're like the reincarnation of my lost love, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Where did this come from? This was not something that was foreshadowed.
I was like, Helen's not really that important.
Besides visually, like whenever they're talking about Candyman's past, they zoom in on Helen and she gets that look of love, or she's framed in a very seductive light, and I'm like,
I thought that was, you know, like how vampires trick girls, and you know, it's like a hypnosis. I never thought it was an actual work of seduction. I was like, this is what you do. This is what you do to lure them into your trap.
I was slowly being seducted by him.
Yeah. But then also talking about Helen, I don't really see anything too terrible about her character.
No, the characters honestly were fine.
Yeah, honestly, all of them, except for Trevor. I hated Trevor, but that was good, though. I mean, you want to hate him, but she gave him too much credit.
Yeah.
But then again...
he was her husband, and he was the only person there for her after her friend was murdered.
Yeah.
So, you know...
I don't know.
I don't like Trevor either, but...
I mean, like, I get why... like, I'll just say personally I hated him. But I also kind of see maybe the reason why her relationship with him didn't last is because she was like, we're married, you're the only one that, you know, that I trust now, da 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 da. And it's like, nah, that's not good. He cannot be your only crutch.
Right. And I felt like now that we're talking about it, I think the movie isolated Helen.
Oh, 100%.
Like, after her friend died, it was either she was alone with Trevor all the time, or she was alone with Candyman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was never, no matter where she went, she was in a good headspace because there was one person saying that she was crazy and the other person saying that he was going to kill her.
Or kill everyone around her and make them think that she killed them.
Yeah, so then everyone in the movie just thought she was crazy or just, and like, I don't really know if Candyman counts because he's the one that was making her crazy. But, and then the movie also plays with the idea of whether or not Candyman's real or if she's just losing it. Because she ends up blacking out and becoming very centered in all of these murders.
Yeah.
And she just shows up with blood all over. And it's like, how did you do that? Which I never really flashback and explain.
Yeah.
But I guess you don't really have to. It's just, he's just kind of setting her up to be the killer.
Yeah, so that they could be together, I guess?
I guess maybe because he was isolating her to where I know what he was doing. He was isolating her... to where, at the end, she would just give up on life and be with him.
Yeah. Or sometimes I wonder if he was isolating her so that she felt the way he did when he was alive, maybe? I don't know. Instructions unclear.
I feel like this is very... I don't know. I really think that's very, like, manipulator.
Oh, no. 100%.
Because, I mean, maybe he was kind of trying to show her how he felt, but I think he was like... if no one loves you anymore and everyone that you love is gone, why not just join me in this bonfire? Come on, you know? But she never...
sounds like a party.
It sounds like a party. But she never really gives in to him, though. I mean, once, though, she was like, yeah, sure, and then he doesn't kill her.
There was a confusing scene where he did a weird... This is gonna sound gross, but it was like a French kiss, but with bees.
It was very nasty. And she pretty much was like, okay, like, I'm done, you can kill me. And then, at the last minute, she said no. So she maybe it's a very...
No consent. I take away my consent.
Well, if that was the case, and that's what they were trying to do, they did it very well.
That was the one moment where I was very confused during that scene, but when he, like, bridal carried her, it was like, okay, this could have been a romance movie. Like, a horror romance, like Crimson Peak.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the Opera.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they went wrong there, or went right.
I really think they should have just hinted at that in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
If they would have started with, like, maybe her rediscovering her reincarnation, or, like, it being very hinted at, or if he's just paying, like, special favor to her.
Yeah.
That would make more sense, but none of that was hinted at all.
It just came off really confusing.
It really did. They were just trying to do too much in one thing.
I will say, it did scare me, but only because... watching Helen spiral out of control and out of her mind and, like, having to question her every move, I was like, oh, I would be scared too if I woke up after blacking out on a floor covered with blood and I'm holding a knife. Like, what am I supposed to do with that? And then everyone around her gaslighting her, you know, and I think in the middle of the film, she's kind of like, what if I did murder these people? Like, I seem to be the only person who kind of has an idea of where this missing baby is.
Yeah, I really do think, too, like you mentioned earlier, especially maybe even for women being gaslighted and also us losing control of our bodies, it's very, very scary. I mean, scary for anyone, but...
It's a little close to real life.
A little close to real life because, I mean, it's very common for someone to turn around and be like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Or
you're crazy.
You're hysterical.
Yeah. You're being too emotional right now.
You just snapped and no one knows why.
Is it your time of the month?
Oh my god. And then you're like, no. And they're like, are you sure? Yeah.
Very, very relatable in that aspect.
And then plus she's being very emotional. She's very freaked out. And they just keep like putting her down for that. So.
I know. You can't have emotions in these movies.
We all learn from He's All That. You cannot have emotion.
Not allowed. No, I think the themes were, like, they had a good, solid base for the themes. They just they weren't able to build on them, and I don't know if that's because of the time, or the production company, or the director.
Yeah.
But they had a solid base for these feminist themes and these racial themes that are still relevant today.
The racial themes was actually very strong in it, and I was almost a little surprised. Because in 1992, you wouldn't think they would be like, oh, if a black girl dies in the building, no one cares. But if a white girl dies, then the whole police is coming.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that line hit me so hard.
Yeah. So in that time, you would think that they really didn't talk that openly about it.
Yeah.
But this just shows that it did, and that this is coming back around. Everything that we're hearing now is not new.
Yeah. Which is heartbreaking, but
it really
we should have listened earlier.
Yes, and can we also say the first black woman director that made the 2021 version?
Yeah, oh my gosh, Nia DaCosta. Hang on.
If we butchered your name, I'm sorry.
Nia DaCosta is the first black female director with a number one film at the box office. And I'm so happy I live in a year where that's a thing. I mean, that just makes me happy every time.
It makes me happy too. And also too, because also in the 2021 version, which we'll get to, they really do build on these racial themes. But you would think that they're really focusing on it more than the original, but they're not.
Yeah, no, they're not.
They talk about it just as much as they do in the original. Now, whether or not people overlooked that in that time, or they even talked about it in that time, I don't really know. I wasn't there. But I loved knowing the fact that that this was talked about and everyone knew this was going on and that they had enough sense to actually put it in the movie.
Right. Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, I felt like you couldn't write a horror movie starring a tortured black slave without
son of a slave
without addressing the racial issues in modern America.
Yes, exactly. So they definitely hit on that well. Of course, and you know, whenever we were watching the first movie, it was a little hard to kind of figure out his motivation of why he wanted to kill.
Yeah, motivation unclear.
Motivation unclear, because whenever you hear about his backstory and how tragic it is, you don't think that he would just kill anybody that said his name.
Yeah, because I had a theory for the first half of the film that was there was someone lynching the black people in the project housing that they were in for most of the movie. But then they actually showed Candyman killing them, and I was like, wait, I thought for sure someone was framing him.
Yes.
You know, because there was evidence that the black woman who was brutally murdered and they were investigating, someone crawled through her wall and stabbed her.
Yeah, so that's when it became unclear. It's like, is this like an actual person? Does this guy have a physical form? Is he a ghost? We weren't sure.
I mean, he do be floating like a vampire for a lot of the movie.
Yeah, he's floating and he like teleports. And yeah, he needs a hole to crawl through.
I could do with plot the bees hole number if I one. Could, you know, float and fly.
Yeah, and then the second version actually talks more about like why he kills, and also what the importance of Candyman as a figure.
Yeah.
And also goes into the background, because like in this movie, you see like Candy with razor blades. You see hints of an artwork about other people, but yeah, they don't ever go into it.
Right.
So you're just kind of like, you kind of think that the 1890s version of Candyman is all there is.
Yeah.
So when he dies at the end, we think it's over.
Which, again, I was confused of how he died, because we thought he was a ghost, but...
I know, like, he burns up, and bees burn, too, like, he evaporates.
Honestly.
But we know that's not the end.
If anything, this man did so much to save the bees. There were so many bees in that movie.
Honestly, yes. In 1992, oh my gosh, I was, like, picture watching this movie and being like, yep, that's that many bees in the world, and now we're watching it, we're like, that's very unrealistic.
And we're like, wow, that's a lot of bees.
Yeah, we're like, listen, he's a good guy.
We like him.
I said there was bees around, people swatting at him, we're like, no! Save the planet!
Oh man. I mean, I like the characters.
I do.
The plot was confusing, but I would stay for the characters.
Yeah, this is definitely a classic example of how the characters can carry the movie enough to where it's popular.
Yeah.
Because the plot was everywhere. Like, I appreciate it, I respect it, I would have rewrote it. 100%.
Yeah. So you would have salvaged it.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I would have salvaged it.
I think you could have tweaked it instead of, you know.
I would have took out the whole romance thing between Helen and Candyman. Mostly because back then it's very frustrating that a man and a woman, and this is just an example, a man and a woman cannot have a relationship that's not sexual.
That's true. That was all over this movie.
Yeah, and then at the end, whenever it's like very sexualized and very romantic, I was like, where was this in the beginning? Mm-hmm. This was not hinted at. But now that they're actually having dialogue and they actually see each other, now they have to have an intimate relationship.
Yeah.
makes me mad, but I guess the times are the times.
They can't be platonic, and she could be like, hey, my husband Trevor is cheating with a 19-year-old. Could you out here?
Can you
right?
go beat him?
I mean, that's what I would have done, because I would have been like, hey, are we pals? Because I really want us to be.
Yeah. No, and it's just very disappointing. That was very disappointing for me.
Yeah.
But, no, talking about Trevor and his... this is, like I said earlier, this movie, I think what they could have done is kind of... closed or focused more on certain plot points and not trying to do so much.
Mm-hmm.
I know me and Jana, whenever we write, this is a big flaw that we have, me especially, is the fact that we try to put so much in a story that it's too much and it just makes it confusing.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this plot did, because while she's running from Candyman, people are dying, a baby gone, like... Trevor, her husband, is also having an affair with like an 18, 19-year-old.
Yeah, one of his students.
Yeah, while she's in an insane asylum. So whenever she comes back to find her husband for his help, he's redecorating the whole kitchen with his side piece. And they're painting it an awful, awful pink.
Which, like, coming from pink. You, is it means it's really bad shade of pink.
It was a bad shade, guys. Bad shade. Rose gold all the way. But yeah, but I did like in that scene, though, we all know at this point that she's not crazy and that she doesn't belong in an insane asylum, and that her getting out is very crucial to even, like, finding the baby or just, like, helping people or warning people. But whenever she sees Trevor and whatever her name is, she really kind of uses the whole insane thing to her advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, like, go to call the police, and she's like, you can call them, but will it get here in time? Like, like, freaks them out to where she's like, are you scared? Like, it was amazing. I was like, that's exactly how I would play that.
So good. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that she was smart. She wasn't your typical, like, oh, no, help me. She's like, I gotta get myself out of this.
Yeah, she's a grad student. She's like, give me some credit. And she also does very well in, like, telling guys off.
Yeah.
Even there was this whole scene with her and her, and one of the professors. They were all having dinner, and the professor was, like, pretty much putting down their whole thesis. And mm-hmm. she was like, yeah, we're gonna bury you with our thesis, so sit down. I was like, yes, thank you. Don't take anything from anyone.
Again, see, she should have just become pals with Candyman, and then he could have been like, I'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, but then again, the movie does kind of show, because girls with confidence too like that, mm-hmm. Especially in movies and stuff, they get put down a peg.
Yeah.
Multiple times. And she, and that's what happened to her.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end, she does become this whole, like, savior.
Yeah, she becomes immortalized in the projects because she saved the baby.
Yeah, the baby that was kidnapped by Candyman. But if you notice, like, in most movies and stuff, the most confident women and the ones, the most badass are the ones that are cut down a couple of pegs because it's like, you can't do that. Here you go. Right here.
Right.
So she was all confidence and like, we're gonna rock this thesis. Yay. To like, they put me in the sale asylum.
This is not the grade that I wanted.
Yeah. I was like, and no one believes me. Even though, like, I'm going and getting my doctorate. Like, yay.
Don't be like Helen.
I can't say we haven't heard the story before, but it's still sad.
I know. Oh, man. With that, do you want to jump into 2021?
Oh, 2021.
Jump into the future.
Yes. Future.
Future vision. So much better than the original.
Oh, so much better. Only because the character's still spot on. Amazing. But the plot made way more sense.
The plot was a great example of my favorite piece of writing advice, which actually comes from Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the writers of South Park, who said that instead of writing your scenes to where it's Ashlyn sat down, and then she put on a hat, and then she did this. You should write them in a way that you can put, Ashlyn sat down, then the chair broke. So there's like a chain reaction, there's a domino effect, and this movie did that.
Yeah, and also it's like a, this happened, therefore that happened.
Yes, this, therefore that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Jana described this to me a couple months ago, and that really helped my plot. It made me go and second guess everything, where it's like, okay, is this happening because it's a thin, or is it happening because something else happened?
Right. You want it to be a chain reaction, and this movie does it so well. It like, to really the point does. Where they're picking at Anthony's character, like his psyche, his sanity, every single step of the way is just being chipped away.
Yes, and it's beautiful. Poor Anthony.
R.I.P. Anthony.
Anthony McCoy.
So Anthony is the baby who was taken in the first movie.
Yes.
Spoilers, but you were warned.
You were fair warned. You should know by now.
He and his partner are artists in Chicago, and they live in the refurbished, gentrified project apartments from the first movie.
Yes.
So.
Oh, yeah. And then pretty much what Candyman is to him is that he learns about the folklore from this laundromat guy.
Who used to live in the projects before.
Yeah. And then Anthony is using Candyman as like his muse for his next art show. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, everything starts to untwist from there.
Right. Ooh, it's such a good movie. Just, I love everything about it.
Yeah, and I was like, oh.
Especially that the characters are smart.
Yes!
And I think that made it scarier, because they knew what to do. Like, there was a point where they're like, hey, let's say the name 5 times in the mirror, it'll be fun. And they're like, no, don't do that. That's stupid.
Yes,
and
I was like, you can tell the smart people from the dumb people. Because you would think it's like, oh, you're a coward, you don't want to do this thing. And it's like, no, respect the boundaries.
Right.
They're like, no, I don't want to do that.
Which made it scary since they were smart because they were still getting
attacked. Yeah, and it's like, it's not their fault.
Yeah. Oh, man. And it all just played together so well. And like, we talked about in 92 how the Candyman character represented his scars and like his characterization. Mm-hmm. I think it did the same thing in this movie.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Anthony, like, so he gets a bee sting and just the whole side of his body starts rotting.
Yes, why didn't he go see a doctor before it reached his face?
Totally.
I will never know. It's in the haiku, people.
It's in the haiku.
Please see a doctor.
But yeah, he just starts rotting, and I felt like that was a physical manifestation of his sanity being chipped away. And even his very, like, like, his personality, his very being, because he learns his entire past is not what he thought it was.
No, exactly. He learns that he is the baby that was kidnapped, and that he actually has this very close connection with Candyman, because he lived with him for a month.
Yeah.
But I also like the relationships, too, in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The brother of the partner and his partner.
Oh, my gosh.
They were great. I love them so much.
Every minute of that film, I was like, you better not hurt them. I love them.
Yeah, that would be so upset.
They're so supportive and, so great.
Yeah, and plus Anthony and his partner, they worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Anthony at this point is struggling a lot with his art, and she's trying so hard to support him.
Yeah, so she's an up-and-coming, like, producer of art.
Yeah. She's an agent.
Agent. Okay, mm-hmm. That's the word. And then Anthony is an artist.
Yeah.
So it's fun to watch their careers kind of try to balance out, but they're never quite equals.
Exactly. And this is another example why you should not be with the same person and work with them. It does not work at all. And this shows it. Mm-hmm. But I also liked, though, how much this one expanded into the past Candyman. Yeah. Even if you've never watched the movies, and we only watched the first one, you would understand what's going on.
Right. No, we literally watched the first one and then had 5 minutes to get to our theater to watch the new one.
Yeah, and we were like kind of scared because the first plot of the first movie was bad.
Yeah, but again, Jordan Peele was on the writing team for 2021, and I was like, I love this man. I have to see.
He did great because Anthony, he has this whole kind of artistic movement thing that takes over him.
Yeah.
And he paints all of the past Candyman.
Yeah. And that's how we get to the heart of why Candyman doesn't need to exist, but that he's so prevalent.
Yeah, because he is the example of racism, but also race, like, violence.
Yeah,
racial violence.
Police brutality and injustice. It was horrific, honestly.
Yeah, because then it turns out that the whole tale and the fact that he has to survive is because he is, like, the personification of all this violence.
Yeah.
So it turns out every Candyman, there's always a new Candyman that's made if someone dies in that area because of racial violence.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a very powerful and very strong, and Anthony
was
a center in that because he, ever since he got bit by that bee, which was Candyman's bee.
Wait, he could have become like Spider-Man.
He did, sort of.
No!
He did!
No!
Because after, he starts slowly turning into Candyman.
Yeah, but he didn't get bee powers.
He kind of did.
Stop it!
He starts flying at the end of the show!
I wish I didn't say anything now. That's not how I pictured it.
Oh my goodness.
But you're not wrong.
You're not wrong. But, so he starts becoming Candyman because it turns out the laundromat guy is, like, it's almost like a religious cult.
Yeah.
Of surrounding Candyman, except, like, he's the only follower. So he takes Anthony, who's completely out of his mind right now, and starts turning him into Candyman.
Which was, so gross.
It was very graphic. He cuts, like, off his hand.
There's an amount of graphic that I can handle, and I could not handle some of the stuff. Thankfully, it wasn't gory for the sake of being gory. It did have a purpose.
Yeah.
And a lot of that purpose was to expose, like, and add on to the themes of racial injustice and segregation.
Because he was like, see, I'm going to make him Candyman. And he's like, I already called the police and gave him the description and said that he's been killing people and they're going to come. And that's what the thing is, though, is that you know at that moment when the police show up, they're going to shoot him.
Yeah, and they do.
And they do. And that's what's so sad about it, too, because it's like, he already knows, he's like, I already set him up to be this character, all I have to do is call the police and they'll do the rest of it.
Right, because that's what happened to the one, so this guy, the crazy
in the very beginning, guy, it opens up.
he encountered the focal Candyman of this movie, who was this guy named Sherman, who was giving the kids candy, and then all of a sudden razor blades were showing up in the candy. And the cops were also looking for this other person at the same time. So they really just needed, an excuse to raid the building.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy Sherman, who had been giving out candy and who had gone into hiding because of the razors appearing in the candy.
Yes.
He freaking walked out of a wall.
Yes, he did.
And again, he was offering candy. He was a harmless old man. Maybe we theorized he may have a mental disability.
Well, we're like, maybe he's homeless. But then again, it does hint, because the thing is, though, is that black kids in that neighborhood have been dying or have been eating the razor blades. And then one girl in the white neighborhood ate it, and now the police are searching for him. And they really do think it's Sherman.
Right, right.
So Sherman's hiding in the in the building, and this little kid walks up, and he comes out of the wall and offers him candy, and the kid screams.
I mean, you would.
I mean, I would, too. If anyone came at me out of a wall.
Right, and that's all the excuse they needed to come in and just... shoot up the place.
Yeah, they beat him to death, and whenever the kid looks down at his hand, the candy's normal.
Yeah, and they said afterwards razor blades were still popping up in candy, so they knew it wasn't him.
Exactly, so but instead of, like, giving him a fair judgment or anything, they just straight up killed him.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the next Candyman.
Yeah. So then the kid is now turning Anthony into Candyman, and he's redoing what he saw happen to Sherman to him, to immortalize him in this legacy.
Yes, because he believes that Candyman should always exist.
Right.
And of course, the end of the show, it almost uses Candyman to fight back against racial injustice.
Yeah, especially Anthony's incarnation of him.
Oh, yeah, because they take Anthony's partner and pretty much threaten her to tell the story their way, because they shot him and killed him. Mm-hmm. So they were like, well, you can tell... tell them that he was armed and was and you were a victim, or we can say you were an accomplice.
Yeah.
You know, make your mind up.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, she says Candyman four times.
I don't know.
That is unclear.
I was so tense the whole movie, like the music and the tension and everything was so good that I was sitting in my theater chair in the fetal position, because I was like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And then, so then the Candyman comes out and kills all the cops and leaves her alone.
Yeah.
So that also, it's kind of like Candyman fighting back, which I'm not sure if the other movies, hinted at that, but I thought that was very interesting. You can definitely see that this is turning a different... It's actually getting to the point of Candyman. I just don't think they were really going to hit the nail on the head just yet. But this is really why Candyman exists. It's more of like an Avenger.
A dark Avenger for sure.
Mm-hmm.
No, I really like this movie. And like with most Jordan Peele movies, I walked out feeling like I learned something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was still scared out of my mind, but I learned something.
Yeah.
And then I love the cinematography and like the puppet shows and
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing is so good. Oh my gosh, go watch this movie.
Yeah.
Go, you know, continue pushing it up to the top of the box office.
Yes, no, for real. I don't really think I have anything negative to say, except that he should have gone saw a doctor.
Yeah.
That's the only thing, because it's just, like, it's obviously just crawling up your skin. You're just like, oh, I wonder if it's going to get better. Pick at it. Like,
oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, watching his transformation through that movie is so, like, gut-wrenching.
It really is.
Because you're like, I don't want him to, but then the more unhinged he becomes, the more you're like, I don't know, maybe it's been like this the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, and also, too, I like that they kind of made the connection between him and him being a baby. Because that also explains why. Because he said it five times in the mirror.
Yeah.
And he didn't die immediately.
Yeah.
But him being the baby that the Candyman wanted in the beginning, mm-hmm. it kind of makes sense. Because it's like Candyman wants him to be the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Do you know what the song this movie reminds me of?
What?
Say my name. Say my name.
No one is around you.
Don't say his name.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. I went through some trauma in the theater that night.
Yeah. No, I was definitely that kid with Bloody Mary. Everyone went to the bathroom
and I was like, I'm living another day.
Yeah, I was like, I don't mess with that bite.
Right. Maybe that's a Southern thing, too. Because I know
think so.
We see Ouija boards, we're like, uh-uh.
Mm-mm. Like, literally everyone in Louisiana, whenever you ask anyone in Louisiana do they believe in ghosts, we'll just be like, we aren't sure, but we don't mess with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've been to New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have all, at least everyone in Louisiana has experienced one haunting.
Yeah.
And we're just like, nah, we good.
It's fine.
We don't need to call anything extra.
Right, right.
But, yeah, definitely tell us what your comments and what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
If you don't agree with us, let us know.
Right.
Or if you have more things to say about it.
For sure. And if you have any insight on the themes, like, this movie is so interesting.
It really is.
And I love unpacking it. Like, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, wow, this is really relevant. And I love that.
And plus, the story really does focus on very specific themes, unlike the first movie.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of themes, obviously we have had fun looking at these movies, but we do have to address that there is some actual real horror.
Yes.
In these movies, especially pertaining to racial violence mm-hmm. and Black Lives Matter. So we're going to be linking some helpful resources we found in our Instagram page and hopefully in the description of this podcast. Because it is important, like, take care of yourself, take care of your mental health. And I'll also be linking some anti-racism resources that have helped me and Ashlyn as well on this journey of learning how to be better allies.
Yeah.
Also, one of them I found is actually written by some of my professors at my school. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, I'm so glad that I'm in a school where I can learn about this and, like, you know, grow on this journey.
Yeah, exactly. We are definitely not experts. We'll never say that we're experts.
No,
not even a little bit.
Yeah.
But we do want to be able to let y'all kind of open the conversation a little bit, because we will talk about it. We will never say that we know everything. There's no way in hell we do.
Yeah, no. Anything you can teach us, we are open to learning.
Yeah, honestly. And honestly, too, if you have views on the racism in this movie, or if you want to bring up a point, definitely do that.
Yeah, or call us out on something we said wrong. We are totally okay with apologizing.
Oh, yeah. No, like I said, we don't know that much.
No, we definitely say a lot, especially in our writing group, that we are white women.
Yes.
And it's not our duty to tell other people's stories.
Definitely.
But
not.
It's important for us to hear them.
Yeah, and it's like, and we do want to try to be as respectful as possible. And if we're not, and if you're like, no, this is too close to home, you don't know what you're talking about, let us know.
Call us out on
you're
it.
You're not going to hurt
we
our feelings.
We don't want to mess around with BS.
No.
So we're purging that from our systems.
Exactly.
But we're so glad you guys joined us for this conversation. Thank you for hanging in on this ride. Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween!
Eat so much candy.
Yes, oh my gosh. Be safe and do not go near mirrors.
Or razor blades.
Okay, check the candy before you eat it.
Check the candy. If a man offers you candy from a wall, just be... I don't know how to handle that one.
That's a judgment call.
That's
a judgment call.
Oh, man.
If you're from Louisiana most of the time, no.
It's been fun talking about scary movies with you, Ashlyn.
Oh, yeah,
thank
it's
you
been
for
fun.
Letting me put you through mental trauma.
Of course. Anytime.
That's concerning. It's a lot of trust you put in me.
A lot of trust. All right, guys. We will see you
In November.
Listen to you. Well, yeah.
Listen to your heart.
You will hear us next time. Yeah. In November, we're going to have a lot more lighter subjects. So we're playing with a couple ideas. So it's going to be fun, guys.
It's going to be great. Keep on track with our Instagram and you'll get some hints and some schedules.
Yes.
As I pump them out.
All right, guys. All right. We'll see you later.
Okay.
Bye.